This is ESPN Radio's Barton Hahn Podcast.
Hour number two. It's Alan Hahn. We've got Mike Tenenbaum in with us today. A little front office insider action. We're just ripping up rosters, trading players. We're signing crazy contracts. There's no salary cap when we're doing it this way. Having all kinds of fun with you today. Hey, weather looking nasty. Don't change your plans. Change your wiper blades. Michelin wiper blades use advanced technology to hug your windshield to channel away water, snow, and ice so you can see clearly and drive confidently. Upgrade to Michelin wiper blades at Walmart. And yeah, I'm going to ask Mike Tenenbaum, everybody, about Damian Lillard and the Knicks. Of course I'm going to do that. I have to do that. This is a guy who traded for Brett Favre. You think he's afraid? He's not afraid. He understands the phrase, scared money don't make money. He knows what that's about. So we're going to get to that eventually. But right now we go to one of my favorite guests that we have each week, Harry Douglas, who joins us right now on the Goodyear Hotline. And Harry Douglas knows how important it is for Damian Lillard to come to the Knicks. I know you do.
Yeah, that would be great for New York. Kemba isn't getting it done, so they need somebody who's more consistent and who's going to be healthy.
Yeah, healthy is an important part. Also somebody that can give you 30 and shoot from, you know, the logo. That would help too. Have that different dynamic the game. But in the meantime, though, Harry, I want to ask you, as a wide receiver, as somebody that played the position, understands it, and has been in big moments and certainly has been in big games where maybe you had to know time, score, situation. I want your take on what you saw from Chase Claypool when he celebrates the first down. It might have cost about 6 or 7 seconds to the Steelers at the very end there. And, of course, he's taken a lot of criticism today for it. What did you think of that play?
What did I think about that play? I thought it was one of the stupidest things I've ever seen football-wise. Because coaches reiterate how important two-minute situations are. You practice it throughout the week. You constantly go over those situations. And I like to use Larry Fitzgerald as an example, a guy who in two-minute situations will go catch the football and go sit the football down himself so the referee doesn't have a chance to even really get the football. You don't want to toss the football to the ref or any of those things, but the clock in your head, a sense of urgency, has your antennas always have to be up. So for Chase Claypool to be what he did last night, I thought it was selfish. It's basically saying that look what I'm doing. It's about me. And that's one of the reasons why the Steelers aren't winning right now. It's because too many guys, individuals, instead of people coming together as a team, man.
Harry, so take us behind the curtain here. You're a Pittsburgh Steeler teammate. What's the conversation you're having with Claypool today?
Well, the first problem is I think they lack veteran leadership in the wide receiver room. That's the first problem. They need a vet in that room who can jack somebody up and say, hey, man, that's not the way we do things. You want to know who I had? I had Joe Horn. I had Roddy White. I had Michael Jenkins. I had Brian Finneran. Joe Horn jacked me up my rookie year when I didn't go to a wide receiver dinner and let me know what the standard was going to be. So they need a guy in that room, and if it's not going to be a guy in that room, it has to be somebody on the offense that goes to those guys. Because coaches only can do so much, right? All the great teams, it comes from guys in that locker room and great leaders. So somebody on that offense has to let the young buck know that's not the way we're going to do things, and you probably cost us another play in that situation last night.
Now, Harry, I know everybody listening right now just went, I need to know what happened there. You didn't go to a dinner and you got jacked up by a veteran for that? What was that? What's behind that story?
Well, the circumstances were I was supposed to pay for the dinner, right? So the whole receiver group, it was during training camp, and you know, your money didn't hit yet in your bank account. So I'm like, man, I'm not going to this dinner and paying for all of this. I don't have it on my card yet. So in my bank account yet. So when everybody showed up and I was the only one back at the dorm rooms watching, I was actually in the meeting room watching some extra film. I got back, Joe Horn, he said, I need to meet with you. I was like, okay, cool. I didn't think nothing of it. Jacked me up and told me, man, he told me a story about with him and Andre Rison and how he missed the team playing because he had to go get Andre Rison some chicken. And he said, it's just one of the things that you do as a rook. You got to pay your dues. And from that point on, I never had an issue with anything. Mm.
Yeah, so, sure. Harry, I just learned two things from that story. One is, like, very interesting and entertaining. And secondly, and more importantly, I'm looking forward to you taking out the entire green room in Bristol for dinner on Sunday night.
Well, that's good because it's only me and Nico in here right now. So that means I only got to take me and him out to dinner.
Whatever it takes. But no, see, I love that stuff because I don't think a lot of people understand – I don't know if politics is the right word, but there is a hierarchy too, even when you're an athlete. You come in, there's a role you play, and there's things you follow, and whether you like it or not, it's just what you do. But this is another situation.
I don't even mean to stop you, but I'm going to go ahead and say this. The problem that we have with the younger cats coming into the league nowadays is that they think they know it all and they don't have to pay their dues, right? Respect the people that came before you and paved the way for you to be in the situations that you are in. That's the issue that we're having, right? They make a little bit of money, but one thing they don't understand, they never going to be bigger than that shield. That's what they need to understand, or be bigger than the logo that's on their helmet. That's what they don't understand. And when an older guy tells you something, don't get upset about it. Just understand that he's been there and done that, and you need to respect that. And that's the problem that we're having, not just in the NFL, but you have it in the NBA. You have it in every sport possible. But these guys need to understand that there were guys that came before them that paved the way. I'd be damned if I'm going to be disrespectful and not respect the people that paved the way for me to be able to play the game I love and make money and provide for my family.
It's amazing.
It was interesting.
Like, I don't know if you were listening, but this feels like a theme this week on the show. We had Jeff Van Gundy on earlier this week, who was saying similar things, but not necessarily about younger players, but it's more about how we – just the mentality you have about work and putting in the work and practice and all those things, where it was, it's the old school versus what people are doing today, and is it really better for the game? And Bart was talking about that before Jeff did, and saying the same kind of things about young players come in and they just have this mentality. And whenever Bart Scott says something, Jeff Van Gundy says something, and now Harry Douglas says something, what you get, though, is the old heads, all of us, nodding our heads going, it's true. And anyone young, and I'll see it right now on our Dr. Pepper Twitter feed, it will be that old man yelling at a cloud thing. Oh, yeah, but old guys, all they do is complain about young guys. But I do think it's a real thing. Whether it's – now Chase Claypool's not the first to ever celebrate something at the wrong time. I mean, we've seen this in years and years and years in sports. But what's the one common thread? They're usually young when they do it. Like, it's usually a young mistake that is dumb, and it could hurt your team. And you try to explain to people, don't do that. But when you do, you're told, you're the old guy, you don't get it, let the young guy celebrate, let him be happy. But time score situation, man, that is not the time. The score was not the right score, and it was not the situation for you to celebrate a measly first down that ended up leading to nothing.
And you know, just
I'll tell
take
you this. I had a receiver coach who hated to play young players because he always say young players will get you fired. Young players just do dumb things, and they're the guys who will get you fired.
And it was interesting listening to Ryan Clark over the last couple of days, you know, criticize everything we're just talking about. You know, you could just hear it coming from his heart because he's, you know, a proud Steeler and all-time great. And you could just tell how much it pains him, everything you're talking about, Harry, and then sort of channel that into, you know, the team he cares so much about. And Chase Claypool may have a great career, and hopefully, you know, last night was a great moment for him to learn. But I will tell you, like, when I've built teams, I always wanted to have a great player in every position room, you know, acquiring guys like a LaDainian Tomlinson, a Jason Taylor, a Brett Favre. Like, you want to do that so, as you just said, Harry, you can, pass lessons on to the next generation.
Yeah, not only that, though, guys. Individuality. Like, I don't understand in a team sport, why is it a priority for everybody? Like, the individual accolades will come, you know what I mean, if you do things a team way and you do it together and y'all win. So, but all this, let me do my thing. I want to talk about playing music. You want to play music, man? Go out there and dominate somebody and win a game. Nobody's scared of Pittsburgh Steelers now. I remember growing up watching the Steelers, and it meant something. It was a standard. I remember when I played in the league, playing against the Steelers, it was a standard. I used to lift extra. I have an extra weight room session before I played the Steelers because I knew I had to bring that thumb. Otherwise, you were going to get demolished. Like, nobody's scared to play Pittsburgh right now.
That's a bad place to be. Again, you could see it in Mike Tomlin. You could hear it in his voice after that game last night. We're talking with Harry Douglas, Alan Hahn, Mike Tannenbaum, ESPN Radio. With that in mind, talking about standards, the Patriots standard certainly is coming back. And I found it fascinating. And I am not trying to promote this thing. This is not something I was told to do. I'm just saying, Man in the Arena is a fascinating docuseries. Why? And for as a Jets fan, I want to throw up my mouth just thinking about having to live through it. But as I watched it, I was like, you know, man, this is interesting. This behind the scenes. And one of the scenes, it was in the second episode where Tom Brady references as he was a young quarterback. And he says this, and this is current Tom Brady is saying this as they're showing footage of Bill Belichick and he when he was still a very young quarterback. And he says, you know, now when people come up to me and they're like, hey, what do you think of this guy? He's in the league 3 years. What do you think his potential is? And the first thing I say is, well, who's teaching him? Who's coaching him? He said, I had Bill. And then they showed them sitting watching film together. They showed him on the practice field where Bill comes up to him and they have even audio of it where he's explaining to him when this situation, they're going to do this. And when they do this, this is what we want to do. And Brady's just absorbing it all. And it now makes me think Mac Jones. And Mac Jones and his success and what he's doing is because he is sort of the antithesis of what we're talking about. Some young players who come in the league and they want everything and they don't feel like anybody can say a word to them. Mac Jones came into the league and he has a teacher and he's saying, I'm going to absorb everything this guy is teaching me. And we're seeing it play out to success that is very familiar in New England. It's an incredible story. But is that where the Patriots are right now, in your opinion? You have a head coach who's still a great teacher, and he found himself another student. Yep.
Yeah, and Mike T, you know this. Everything's about foundation, right? Are you foundationally sound in your organization? And when you look at the New England Patriots, they've done it for 20-plus years now, right? You look at Mr. Kraft, and you look at Bill Belichick, the head coach, and does a lot of the general manager stuff, right? So when you have that foundation, then you got Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator. You have that foundation, and Tom was able to have that. And then you see Mac Jones coming into there. There's no surprise why he has the success. He has the success because his foundation is there, right? It's just like a household, right? If your household isn't right foundationally, everything is going to fall apart. And that's what you see with some of these organizations with these young quarterbacks. But you have a happy home in New England where the foundation is solid, and you see the success of Mac Jones right now.
Yeah, and there's another way, Harry, to say that. Like in draft meetings and when you scout players, you talk about – the tape sets the floor and the character sets the ceiling, meaning they're going to come into the league with a certain amount of talent. And then how hard are they going to work and their intangibles? Will they maximize what they have? And I think what you're saying about Mac Jones is a great example. I think he was probably slightly underrated when he came out and he had a really good baseline. And now you think about his ceiling, like impeccable worker, really important to him. And to have those resources every day of a Bill Belichick, a Josh McDaniels, I think the greatest compliment right now we could give Mac Jones is, and I'm as guilty as anybody, like we often, you know, start with the prepositional phrase, well, he's a rookie, you know, Zach Wilson or Trevor Lawrence or, you know, Justin Fields. Like, we're not even using the label of, oh, he's a rookie with Mac Jones because he's playing with such poise.
Yeah, you can certainly see that. Harry Douglas joining us right now. It's Alan Hahn, Mike Tannenbaum, Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio. As a player, when you hear Mike McCarthy say, well, we're going to win on Sunday, and say it publicly. You're used to a coach saying that to you as a team, as a group in your meetings. But when you hear it said in the media, and then, of course, now I'm a reporter. I walk up to you, and I'm like, Harry, Mike just predicted that you guys are going to win Sunday. Your thoughts. And I'm putting that in your head now that you got to deal with that. First, I want to get that perspective. And then if you could flip it and put yourself on Washington. And now I'm a reporter going up to you. Hey, by the way, the Dallas coach just said they're going to win on Sunday. What do you think of that? So give me both perspectives.
Well, I'll say Coach McCarthy. Usually you say those things behind closed doors, but I thought one of the messages he was trying to send to his team is reiterate to them how important the football game is and how much of a win it has to be for the Dallas Cowboys. Because if they lose that football game, then now they only won a game ahead of Washington. Right. They still got to play the Arizona Cardinals, and they play Washington again. So that's why it's important. And on the flip side of that, you look at the Washington football team, and I don't care what anybody tells you, being a former athlete, being in locker rooms, the bulletin board material is real, right? Oh, okay, they head coach guaranteed that they're going to win. Okay, we got something for Dak. We got something for Coop. We got something for CeeDee Lamb. Not saying that they're going to go out there, the Washington football team's going to win the game, because I still think Dallas is going to win the football game, but just don't want to give them any extra motivation. But on top of it, you're putting your quarterback, Dak Prescott, in a vulnerable situation. And other players on that football team, when they have to answer the media. Now, I mean, you got to rock with your coach. You got to ride with your coach 100%. One band, one sound. So now it's extra pressure on them to go out and to perform. So you don't really want to put those guys in that situation like that.
Harry, if you're a free agent and you had a chance to go to the Giants, would you look at them and say, no, nah, I'm passing on that team right now?
Who's my quarterback? Am I a free agent wide receiver?
Yeah, you're a free agent wide receiver, and Gabe Gettleman, Joe Judge, Daniel Jones, everybody's in place. And you've got options, but this is one for – it's New York, and they're like, hey, we'd love to have you. Want to get another weapon here for Daniel Jones. And they are what they are right now. Would you pass on playing for the Giants?
But it's still potentially Russell Wilson could come here too, though, right?
No, I'm telling you what I'm saying. I'm not giving you those scenarios. I'm giving the scenario of
hell
this is
no,
the team.
Hell no, hon. Hell no. I'm not coming to New York with Daniel Jones as quarterback. No, not doing it.
Oh, you just mentioned Daniel Jones, though. So you don't have a problem with the coach or the GM. It's more the quarterback?
Well, I mean, I got a problem with all of it. But still, I mean, if I got to choose where I'm going to free agency, I'm not going to pick, okay, I'm just going here and Daniel Jones in the dysfunctional franchise. No. I just said Daniel Jones first because he's the quarterback and he's going to be the guy throwing me the football.
Right, right. I see. So it starts there. It's not like you see something wrong with the way he throws the football. It's more just, I'm not winning with this.
Well, I don't think Daniel Jones has been consistent in his career, right? But at the same time, we just talked about that foundation, right? Mm-hmm. We just talked about leadership. It's not there in New York, in my eyes. Especially when you look at Gettleman, because Gettleman had an opportunity to do things differently when it came to his draft picks. He didn't do that. He basically wanted to back up and solidify his draft pick in Daniel Jones, and now the New York Giants are in the situation they're in right now. So, no. I wouldn't do that.
Harry, great stuff as always. Good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Harry.
No problem.
All right, Harry Douglas on the Goodyear Hotline. Really interesting stuff he said about Claypool. But, Mike, I want you to now, after what he said, now give me the executive reaction to a guy who's a wide receiver who basically told you, let me quote him, hell no when it comes to wanting to go to the Giants if their situation remains the same. What does that tell you?
I would turn it on its head. If I was at the Giants, I would say, come on and be part of the solution. You have an opportunity to help change the narrative. This isn't for everybody. This is going to be a big challenge, but we believe in you, and we believe that you could help turn this thing around.
But from the outside looking in, doesn't it suggest to you, though, that do you, or maybe you would disagree with me. It just feels like they need to make sweeping changes there, that whatever this combination is, this ain't it either, and the fear of, well, we don't like to just keep rebuilding. Remember what Dan Graziano told us earlier in the show? The Giants don't like, you know, they don't like to rebuild. And then we said, well, we'll remove the prefix because they got to build. There's no re-anything at this point 10 years later. But do they need a full overhaul of that franchise?
Yeah, I mean, I would say this, like, looking at the quarterback position, Daniel Jones had two big question marks to answer when he came out of Duke. One was turning the ball over. How to minimize that, how to reduce it dramatically, and durability. And he's had 3 years, and in a fair evaluation, neither of those things have gotten better. So they need, in my opinion, to reevaluate the quarterback position. It starts there. I do like Joe Judge. I was really disappointed how they played, in particular against Miami. I thought it just didn't look like they were prepared. You know, we've seen good teams like Colt McCoy take Arizona, go win at Seattle, go win on San Francisco. You can win on the road in this league, Alan, with a good backup quarterback. I just was surprised that Freddie Kitchens gets this opportunity, and he expects to go down to Miami to throw the ball all over the park with Mike Lennon. So he has a couple more weeks here, but I do like Joe Judge generally. I was a little disappointed, though, how they played in the last couple weeks, and I do think they need a new quarterback.
If the job became available, the GM job became available, would you be interested, even if they told you, well, you can't bring in your own coach, you got to keep the head coach because he's only been here 2 years and, you know, we're sticking with him. Is that, for a GM, one of those, I don't know if I want to walk into a situation like that, or because you like Joe Judge, you're like, no, I know him enough to feel like I can work with him. Is that a tough job to sell?
You know, Alan, I get asked that question a lot. I'm very fortunate. I help out a number of GM candidates, younger guys, mentor them, help them, prepare them. And I say the same thing, which is there's 32 NFL teams on the planet. There's a couple that are family run. There's like 29 or 30 of these jobs. None of them are perfect. They all have their pros and cons. If you believe in yourself, if you believe in your process, go take a job and make it better. And I'm proud of like the opportunities I got. Like, you take what you have there, you make it better, and that's really when you're looking at things, unless it's an insurmountable situation, which I don't believe the Giants are, because there are they have a lot of great young skill players, and I think this is a team that if they could get healthy, make a couple of changes down, I think they can make their turnaround much sooner than later.
All right, this feels like a conversation we definitely need to get back into because I have a million more questions, but we're up against the clock. So we'll leave it right there. But, of course, we do have calls to get to at some point, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. But coming up, you know it's time for Audio Files, and that you will hear Ryan Clark with more tough criticism about his former team. They have had enough in Pittsburgh. It's Barton Hahn. It's the Barton Hahn Show with Alan Hahn and Mike Tannenbaum on ESPN Radio.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Bart and Hahn.
Welcome back. It's Bart and Hahn. Alan Hahn with Mike Tannenbaum today, ESPN Radio. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us in the Goodyear Hotline. Harry Douglas is fantastic. Always good to talk with him. And we have, Dan Graziano was on earlier in the show. And then later on, Sal Palantonio going to join us. So the other half of the can't wait moment will at least be with us today. But our hearts go out to Bart Scott and his family. He is not with us today. He went back home mourning the passing of his grandmother. So again, all our best to him and his family. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance, protecting your business with specialized coverages for your commercial vehicles. More Progressive Commercial. .com. All right, Mike, how much do you consume this show? Do you catch it when you can? Because I know you are jumping on other shows throughout the day. But other than being a guest, you catch the show once in a while, don't you?
100%. I mean, it's must listening in the middle of the day.
I like that. All right, so this is the middle of the show. And at this point of the show, we stop talking and we let the headline makers do the talking in a segment that we call Audio Files.
The audio file.
And we begin with last night's game, Thursday Night Football, where the Steelers were losing 29-0. And then all of a sudden it became a game. Why? Well, it's because it's Kirk Cousins and the Vikings. And the Vikings, they don't know how to play with a big lead. It has to be a close game. It has to be a one-score game. That's just what they do. So the next thing you know, it's a one-score game. And it's late. And it's Ben Roethlisberger, who is, you know, on his last legs, we know this, but still can lead you down for a game-winning drive if you let him, and he almost did it. And at one point, with the clock ticking, he gets a first down on a pass to Chase Claypool, who then proceeds with 36 seconds on the clock and no timeouts to celebrate his first down, although there was a lot more to be done. A few, like more than 5 or 6 or 7 seconds, precious seconds, tick off the clock. And he's getting a lot of criticism for it. Now, the Steelers did have a chance in the end zone to get the win, but did not come up with the completion. Could they have used another down? Of course they could have. But for Chase Claypool, he had to answer the bell when it comes to his decision to celebrate himself in a moment where his team needed every second they could get. Here was his explanation.
Yeah, definitely got to be better. I got tackled near the hash, did my little first down point, and went to hand the ball to the ref. He had just got there. So even if I got right up and looked for him, he just wasn't there. So he ran down the field to come get the ball, and the ball got knocked out of my hands. that's what costed us time. But I definitely do have to be better. I knew the situation. I knew, you know, I know I'm near the hash. I know the ball's placed on the hash, but I got to be better.
It's an amazing thing, Mike, right? The accountability thing. We're going to sound like old men. I don't care. This is what kids do. I could be better, but you know, let me see. The ball got knocked out of my hands. That's really where we lost the seconds. I did my little first down point. I was trying to find the referee. I mean, every excuse he can come up with, none of them I buy.
Alan, that was awful. You own it. You eat it. You take responsibility, and you move on. And it, gosh, like, that may have been, the games are so close. Like, maybe that one or two extra seconds, Alan, would have given them one more play at the end of the game after Freiermuth couldn't hold on to the last pass.
Yeah, I mean, that's right there. If he catches that, he saves them, but he doesn't make the catch, and now Chase Claypool has to face the music. And I don't know how he handled that part of it. But I know that Ryan Clark did not handle well seeing the Steelers lose again and get manhandled in that first half. Now, they've been through a ton of injuries themselves. They're playing some people that shouldn't be playing. We understand all of that. But Ryan Clark has been tough on his former team. And in fact, he was so tough on them, calling them out for being soft. And Mike Tomlin was like, yeah, well, you know, guys who have been here understand the standard. You know, they get it. So it wasn't like even the coach wasn't disagreeing with Ryan Clark. So you understand, when RC took to the airwaves after last night's performance, he continued with his criticism of the Steelers.
This is who the Pittsburgh Steelers are becoming. They're becoming a team that's not physical on the offensive or defensive line. They're becoming a team that doesn't look prepared to play or doesn't look prepared to match how they'll be attacked on either side of the football. And they're becoming a team that players seem to be more interested in getting their shine or more interested in making sure that people see them than making sure that people see wins. And we have to stop looking at the Pittsburgh Steelers as what they have been historically. We have to stop looking at them as this story franchise who's won 6 Lombardi trophies in their recent history. They're a team that makes more headlines for what they do off the field than what they do on the field.
You know what, Mike? This reminded me of post-Super Bowl Giants, Odell Beckham Jr. in, and how so much of, and it's not all his fault, but so much of what they were, like Tom Coughlin's downfall was the fact that he wanted to hold them accountable and nobody else in the franchise would let him. And it all became about what was going on off the field than it was on the field. And the standard was lost. But I'll tell you what, with the Steelers, the one reason why I have hope is that Mike Tomlin is the standard, is the guy who holds up that standard, who creates that standard and maintains it. And they're not moving on from him like the Giants moved on from Tom Coughlin. So this should be fixed, but it is certainly alarming to see.
Yeah, that is all well said. Like, the standards are the standards, and this is an organization that in over like 40 years have had three coaches: Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, and now the great Mike Tomlin.
Right.
And I think what we saw last night, he was pouring his soul out, which is, it's not good enough. And I think he's, you know, there's an understanding there, a realization. And to me, candidly, like, it's going to get worse before it gets better. Again, they have a few pieces in place, but compared to the other teams in the North, I just think they got a ways to go, and it starts with the quarterback. And yeah, I think the Chase Claypool things are not acceptable, but we had Harry Douglas on a few minutes ago. I think things like that can be fixed.
Yeah, that can be fixed. And again, as long as you have the coach there to make sure this is who we are, and I will make sure that we stay this way, because the most dangerous thing is when a franchise loses its identity and there's no one there to make sure that identity is upheld. When you start cleaning house, that's where it gets concerning. So I do not think that'll happen there with the Steelers. Meanwhile, as we told you earlier, Mike McCarthy saying Cowboys are going to win. Dak Prescott, I have no problem with what he said. I believe that. Cowboys already talking before they play a very important NFC East game against a Washington team that's making a late push. Ron Rivera, what does he see as the biggest challenge in taking on Dallas?
If you look at them defensively, is there an aggressive, opportunistic group? You know, you've got to take what they give you, and you've got to stick to that mantra and be patient. If you're not, they'll find it and they'll exploit it. You know, when you watch how they've beat teams, it's been when they've taken the ball away, when they've gotten after the quarterback and forced things to happen. We've got to be very disciplined. We've got to be willing to accept what's out there. defensively, what we've got to do is we've got to keep them in front of us. You know, this is a fast strike team. This is a team that really makes a lot of explosives, and we've got to limit that number, and we've got to keep them in front of us.
So he didn't guarantee anything, but he did make it pretty clear that this Dallas defense, when they're whole, we remember early in the season, they take the ball away a lot. What was that stat you gave me earlier in the show? Three players have only played many snaps together?
Yeah, so when you think about three pressure players in their front seven, DeMarcus Lawrence, Randy Gregory, and now the great rookie Micah Parsons Allen, those three have been on the field for a combined 28 snaps this year. So you think about the job that Dan Quinn has done as defensive coordinator and the massive improvement they've made, remarkably, with their three best players only being on the field together for a combined 28 points. That's why I think Dallas wins this game, and something that we're not talking about nearly enough in terms of a storyline heading into this game. This is going to be a dominant Dallas defense
in this game. So you're saying in this game we will see the Cowboys as we remembered them in the first 6 weeks of the season?
I think we learned a lot about the Dallas Cowboys on opening night when they went into Tampa Bay. Dak coming off of the big injury a year ago, Dak with the shoulder injury. And I think we learned a lot. They stood toe-to-toe with the world champs in Tampa Bay Stadium. And I think that game told us a lot. Dallas is a really good team on both sides of the ball.
All right. Well, that's one of the games you have to watch on Sunday, Week 14. And that's Audio Files. Thank you, Mike. Always fun to do audio files and hear all that stuff, and especially hear RC just going off on his former team. But now we got to talk, Mike. I've been waiting to – when I heard that you would be filling in for Bart today, I was like, well, I know what I'm going to talk about, and it's not – I know we got to talk NFL, but I have an NBA topic I need to discuss with you. And, in fact, people need to hear you discuss it because you're a guy that spent a lot of time in the front office in the NFL. But you also know the NBA because you've represented some people in the NBA as well on the agent side of things. So you know how that operates as well. But this isn't really a sports-specific question I have for you. It's more of when you're running a team, when you're managing a franchise, what goes into a decision such as trading for a superstar like Damian Lillard, who could eventually become available. We're all waiting for it. So how would Mike T handle the Damian Lillard situation in Portland if he was running the Trailblazers? And also, if he was running the Knicks, what would he be willing to give up? You've got to hear it, and it'll be next. Barton Hunt, ESPN Radio.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Bart and Han.
All right, welcome back, Bart and Han. Alan Han joined by Mike Tannenbaum today. And Mike, Mel Kiper put out his big board as we start to anticipate. Because, you know, when you root for bad teams, the first thing you start doing is thinking of next year and how can we get better, right? So we start looking at the draft. And you look at some of the names on the big board and at the very top. And this was interesting. In the right now, I believe the top seven picks, four of them will be New York, right? Two by the Jets, two by the Giants. I think we're still at that point where it's going to be a very busy time for New York teams. So as a Jets fan, you start looking, you think, what do the Jets need? And one name that Bart Scott was so adamant about is a name, because he thinks that, you know, can the Jets get one of the edge rushers? Can they get, you know, whether it's Thibodeau, whether it's Hutchinson? Well, that'd be really nice to add a piece like that. The Jets never seem to have a pass rusher. But he felt like there's a name to look for, and he's not on the top 25 of Kiper's big board, but he is mentioned as the second best defensive tackle, and that's Jordan Davis, who just came away with two big defensive awards for college football on the season. Now, he's the, you talk about big, he's the mammoth tackle for the Georgia Bulldogs. Have you seen him, and what do you think of his NFL potential?
I sure have. I was at the SEC championship game this past weekend in Atlanta, Alan, and he's everything like what Bart was just talking about. He's really a dominant interior player. You know, he's going to come out and everyone's going to label him, oh, he's a run stopper. And yeah, he is a run stopper. But for his size, Alan, he has great athleticism, great balance, explosion, and he's somebody that he'll be really hard to evaluate from this standpoint. He'll come into the league and he'll impact the passer, and a lot of it will never show up in the stat sheet. If Tom Brady was on the show, he would always talk about what gives quarterbacks the most trouble, Peyton Manning, any of these traditional pocket passers, is quick interior pass rushers that could throw offensive linemen in their lap. And that's what Jordan Davis can do. He could push the pocket, make things really uncomfortable, and he may not have elite sack numbers, Alan, but he will be productive, and he will certainly impact the quarterback.
How does the thinking work when it comes to the draft? Like, you look at – you have a coach, like again, in a Jets situation, you know, would you change your format based on, well, this guy's available and, you know, it wouldn't work in a 3-4. We'd have to go to more of a 4-3. You know, does that factor in when you're making a pick, saying, well, our coach doesn't really coach this way, and you might pass on a really good player because it doesn't fit the style he wants to play? Or do you tell your coach, this guy's good, you figure it out? You might have to change what you're thinking to fit this guy's talent into what we want to do.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like, for any of the 32 teams, like, you want Jordan Davis on your team, and if a coach can't figure out how to use him, like, it's a lot easier to find a coach than it is Jordan Davis. So good coaches will find a way to use him.
Real quick then, on this draft, who would you say is a guy that if you have the number one pick, this is the guy you take?
Well, I kind of agree with Mel. Hutchinson and Thibodeau, we'll be debating that till April. They're both great players, elite people. You know, I think certainly Hutchinson has leadership. He has attributes you can't see. He's one of the people that really helped turn around that Michigan program. So if he turns out to be a Detroit Lion or a Houston Texan, they just got a lot better.
Yeah, and it's again, defense at the very top, I think, of this draft. We've had a couple of big quarterback drafts over the last few years. This one will not be that. We are back in 10 seconds. Welcome back. Barton Hahn, ESPN Radio. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Tannenbaum joining us today. And Mike, I've been waiting to ask you this question and talk to you about this topic throughout the whole show. Can we push the NFL to the side just for one? I know it's Football Friday, but just for a few minutes, just for one segment, indulge me on this. Because I need to know. The story has been about Damian Lillard, and he tells everyone, and I've been saying this for years, he will never demand a trade. He will never ask for a trade. He will never do that. It's going to be up to the Trailblazers to go to him when they're ready to trade him, or if they want to rebuild or whatever it is. So I want to put you in the front office. Neil O'Shea has been out. He was fired. They have an interim in right now, which, of course, that's a lot to ask of anybody that really hasn't done the job before. But if you're in that front office, what are you doing with Damian Lillard right now? 31 years old, still some money, a lot of money left on his contract, and reportedly, according to Woj, asking for another 2 years with an average of $50 million a year on top of it, which would take him to the age of 37. What would you do if you were Portland right now? Would you say, I'm keeping this dude. I am not trading him. He's everything. We just got to build better around him. Or would you say, I got to trade him while he's still worth a lot of assets to me and I can get a real rebuild happening?
Yeah, it's probably the latter, because unfortunately, it's not realistic. The West is loaded right now. I mean, you know, and we're not even talking about the Clippers with Kawhi being out, but obviously, you know, they're there in the mix. But you have the Lakers and Utah. I mean, Denver, it's so deep out there. Phoenix.
Golden State,
my guy Steve Kerr. Shame on me for not mentioning them first. And they're so deep out there that it's unrealistic that in the next 3 to 4 years they're going to win a championship with Damian Lillard. So the old Branch Rickey, the longtime GM of the Dodgers, he talked a lot about how it's better to trade a player too soon than too late. And we talked earlier on the show about how with Ben Roethlisberger, you know, 2 years ago was probably when they should have made that consequential decision, and now they're going to – it's just going to slow down their rebuild. With that said, I would trade him probably to the East, get him out of the conference if I could, and get as many picks as I can for, you know, the long term. And we've seen Philadelphia do that. We've seen OKC do that. And it's a painful, but it's probably the most appropriate decision given the situation for Portland.
All right, with that in mind, now I'm going to put you in the front office of the New York Knicks, who have been searching for a point guard as long as the Jets have been searching for a quarterback, as long as the Cleveland Browns have been searching for a quarterback. They have been looking for a point guard like this literally since Walt Clyde Frazier. So with that in mind, knowing where the Knicks are right now, flexible contracts, a lot of young players, and a ton of first-round picks over the next couple of years, he's 31. People still remember the Carmelo Anthony deal that involved 13 players and four different teams, and some people felt like they overpaid to get him. What are you doing if you're them? Are you all in? I don't care what it takes. Or are you saying, we're not going to rip this whole thing apart for one player because you don't know what it's going to result in? What are you doing if you're playing this as a Knick GM?
I'm getting him, and I'm going to do everything I can, hopefully within reason, because I know for the next 3 years I'm a very competitive team in the East with him, given the progress they've made. And look, they're not a perfect team. We know that. But they're a lot better than where they were from 2 years ago. And when you bring a guy like that in, I've been fortunate, you know, traded for Brett Favre at the Jets. When you do that, it makes your whole – organization better. There's a buzz, there's an energy, and most importantly, Alan, there's something known as aura of association, which is this. We saw what happened with LeBron and everybody, you know, from the ADs of the world, now Westbrook, they want to sign with him. We saw what happened with Tom Brady when he went to Tampa Bay, from Antonio Brown to Gronk, and all of a sudden people will want to come to the greatest city on the planet to play at Madison Square Garden, to play with a great player in his prime. And that aura of association is a great intangible that's hard to measure, and that's why I would be all in on getting Damian Lillard.
Real quick, when you made the deal for Brett Favre, was there any regrettable piece, like looking back now in hindsight, that you gave up and said, wow, that hurt?
We gave up a third-round pick. So, you know, it was all about being a great listener, understanding what he wanted, which was he wanted a place to hunt and fish that was close to the facility. And I said, Brett, if you don't hunt and fish every Tuesday on your day off, I'm going to fine you. And I sent Google satellite images of a farm that had 500 acres of places to hunt and fish within 15 minutes of that Jet facility. And that's how he became a Jet.
See, that's attention to detail. That's what I like. Well, Dame Lillard loves to rap. I think he can find studios in New York City to take care of that.
I'd build him one. If he became a Nick, I'll build him one.
And people that would certainly love to listen to his music. It would sound a lot sweeter if he wore orange and blue. We'll see where that goes. AFC North wide open. Who takes the crown? That's next.
Thanks for listening to the Barton Hahn Podcast. You can listen live to Barton Hahn weekdays at noon Eastern on ESPN Radio or stream the video of the show on ESPN Plus. Bart and Hahn, the podcast.